I tell you what, Jacqueline Magnay, I would love to have your frequent flyer point balance account, because it must just be skyrocketing. Where are you in the world today? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Laurie and Dave. I'm in Tokyo, and the reason is that in 6 months' time, we have the opening ceremony of the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, and I've been checking out the venues and seeing how their preparations are going here. A city of over 35 million people, they've managed to fit in something like 43 venues, Olympic venues, many of them new, overlooking Tokyo Bay and in very spectacular settings. So far, the preparations seem to be on track. The venues are all ready, except for one, which is the Aquatic Centre, and that's due for completion in a couple of weeks' time. So they're well ahead of schedule. And surprisingly, with their huge budget here, well over the operating budget for the Olympic Games, $5.6 billion, not one cent is being paid for by the taxpayer, because the level of sponsorship and corporate support has been such that they haven't had to dip into any public funds.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? The thing that surprises me, though, Jack, is the Aquatic Centre not being finished. I thought that'd be all done, all finished. Haven't they had most venues up and running for the last 12 months, 18 months?
Yes, they have. But the Aquatic Centre is literally just being painted inside. It is new and it is being finished. And there is a test event in April to kind of open that centre. So that's still several months ahead of the Games, where the Aquatic Centre is one of the must events. The tickets for that event have all sold out. In fact, the tickets for the entire Games will be a sellout. They've had two rounds of ticketing so far for the Japanese domestic audience, and put more than 8 million applications for around 4 million tickets that were on offer. So a huge interest here. I was also up in Sapporo just a few days ago, where they've moved the marathon and the race walks, and the levels of interest there as well are quite extraordinary. People are very, very excited about these Games, because the last ones were, 1964?
Yeah.
And, guys, the oldest competitor that may compete, he hasn't yet qualified, Hiroki Hoketsun, an equestrian fellow who competed in 1964, believe it or not, and will be 79. If he makes the team,
Jack.
So, there's hope for it all yet.
I know that the it's sort of been thrown around loosely, especially the last couple of Olympics. You know, like a lot of people say, "Oh, London was the best Games ever." Then you've got the people that say Sydney being the best Games ever. If you get a sense and a vibe just from what you read, that this particular Olympic Games, the way the Japanese do things, is going to be right up there and very, very hard to top.
It's going to be extraordinary, but there are two things that could be spanner in the works, and that is the transport, that the athletes need to get to the events on time, and, of course, being in a congested city, that's a very difficult thing for athletes to plan ahead and know that their bus is going to take half an hour to get to the venue. Most of the venues are located near around Tokyo Bay, but those that are outside of Tokyo or a little bit further that involve, some travel, that could be a real problem for them. The other huge thing for everybody is going to be the weather, and it's going to be very, very hot and very, very humid. So they're looking at various measures, air conditioning and ice baths and various means for the athletes to keep cool. And of course, they've moved the marathon and the race walks up to the Northern Ireland to have cooler conditions for them. And many events also starting much earlier in the morning. We're talking 6 a.m. starts for some events. So that's to make it more comfortable for the athletes.
We had Pyeongchang in 2018 in the winter. We've got Tokyo this year, Beijing Winter Olympics in 2020. So that's now three successive Games in the Asia region. One is that region embracing it. And two, is there a concern that these Games are becoming too expensive to run? I know that obviously Japan, you just said that a lot of corporate money's been rolling in, but you go back to Brazil, that seemed a bit of a nightmare financially. Is it
Greece?
Yeah, Greece. Is it too hard to have these Olympics now, and too much of a risk outside of, say, these areas, these well-developed areas?
Well, the IOC has recognised that, and they received a lot of criticism when the Sochi Winter Olympics were held, where basically the Russians built an entire ski resort and tunnelled through the mountains, and that was included in the Olympic budget, which created these huge, figures that everyone balked at. But the IOC has introduced these, what they call these new norms, where they're looking at cities to have temporary venues, looking to really strip out the extraneous costs of hosting the games. And the problem is here in Tokyo is the government wants to present the country and the city in the best possible light, and they weren't part of these new norms, and so they've thought, right, we're going to spend the money on brand new stadiums. We want to upgrade our infrastructure. But the IOC is saying, no, can we just have more temporary venues? Can we just refigure this venue plan? Can we just downgrade the quality of the seats in this temporary venue? So they are trying to make it more cost efficient so that cities will bid for the Olympics. You do have the next games already planned. You've got Paris in 24, you've got LA in 28, and hopefully Brisbane in 32. And the Olympics have already allocated, or they've already looking at Sapporo in Japan for the 2030 Winter Olympic Games as well. So the IOC still isn't short of bidders, but they are very conscious that cities have to be able to afford these events, and that taxpayers have to be happy about hosting them.
Now, Jack, we know you're over there in Tokyo, this has received a little bit of news over here in Australia. The Saracens Rugby Union Club about salary cap cheating. How big of a story is it over in Europe, and can you liken it to any other team that's happened to in the past?
This is extraordinary. This has rocked the entire sport of rugby. This is a sport that thought it was kind of immune and was above any kind of this, organised cheating, and yet the Saracens has been accused of financial doping. It would be like Melbourne Storm. It's not even being demoted to reserve grade. It is being relegated to a point where they are in a just very difficult for them to keep going. This is a club that refused to open its books because of salary cap allegations, and they've been stripped of 35 points, £5 million fines, which the other clubs said, we will help you pay that fine, but you have to tell us what you're doing, open your books and be transparent about it. And the club has refused. So they've, clearly been involved in a lot of creative accounting. And what players, you've got seven of the England players playing for this club who are now playing in a kind of local competition, and they're trying to impress Eddie Jones to stay in the national side when they are not even allowed to be competing in the best competition in the world. Mm. So for many of those players, they've got big problems because the club has to cut £2 million off its salary cap. That means big cuts for players' salaries. And yet, where do they go? What other clubs are going to pick them up at this stage? And they want to play, but at what level to be able to continue playing for the national team?
Mm. Jacqueline, we really appreciate you being up so early. We know it's very, very early. Sparrows in Tokyo at the moment. Enjoy the rest of your Japan trip, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Speak to you then.